Trackers. We're happy to be back after a few weeks hiatus, and we look forward to a racing year in 2018. The second Pegasus World Cup is in the books, and 2017 Horse of the Year Gunrunner was a convincing winner. He continued his 2017 run, duplicated his Breeders' Cup Classic victory, and ends a Hall of Fame career and is now off to the breeding shed. We now look to 2018 and its new leader, West Coast. And we also look forward to the three-year-old crop with the Kentucky Derby Trail that begins this weekend. I'm Bill Gottemer, and tonight my co-host will be Mike Monroe and Bob Santamaze. As you know, each week we try to capture what has transpired in the racing world and bring new information to our listeners. Please spread the word about how much fun we have here each Thursday night. Hello, Mike. Hello, Bob.
Hey, Bill. Good evening.
How are you, Bill?
Guys, we're so happy to be back. We took a couple of weeks off, kind of recharged. Mike, I know you weren't feeling well. You seem to be doing much better now, right?
Yeah, thank God. Minus two kidney stones, doing a lot better.
Bob, we did the show so many weeks in a row, and then I don't know, between Mike being sick and the end of the year blahs in racing and me being busy at work, and I'm glad, Bob, you talked us into coming back onto the show. Well, we're happy to have you on board.
Well, listen, as you just noted, we just had a big weekend this past weekend at Gulfstream with a real big race and an awesome performance by Gunrunner. And we're sitting on a ton of action for Saturday with the three-year-olds, so I think it's a perfect time to start.
It is. I mean, I guess we'll talk a little bit about the Pegasus World Cup. I kind of don't know where I stand on it, to be honest with you. The race was good, obviously, and it's a lot of money, but I don't know if I'm sold on the concept yet. Any thoughts, Mike?
I'm with you, Bill. I'm really not sold on it. It's always nice to see a star like Gunrunner, come out there and duplicate his effort that he ran in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and I'm sure Bob will agree. But I mean, the only horse that actually really made a run at him during the whole race was West Coast, who's starting his four-year-old campaign, and for that kind of money, it was kind of a lackluster field, and I just think they need to offer a better racing field for that kind of money.
Yeah, Bob. What are your thoughts? I'm not sure how it fits in. I guess I'm just not comfortable with it yet.
I'm going to disagree a little bit in that. I actually thought the field was almost as good as the Breeders' Cup field. I mean, you had, I mean, you drew Taste of New York in from Europe, even when running a couple leads. But I think the purse is so enormous. You guarantee a full field. I think a case could be made for, if you took Gunrunner out, a case could be made for a good half dozen of those horses to run well. I just think this was a case of, much like Arrogate in the past year, we're sitting on a horse that was far superior to his competition. He breaking from that 10 hole is death at Gulfstream. He breaks from the 10. He runs into a very solid pace. And except for a minor run, maybe at the 3/8 pole by West Coast, this horse was gone. So I don't know if I would see this as a reflection of the field, as more of a reflection that, and me included, I grossly underestimated the capability of Gunrunner. Listen, I said on this show a couple of months ago, I didn't think he'd take his form to Del Mar, and he did that and then some. So anything that I think brings a spotlight to the sport. And you had NBC covering it full-fledged. You had a pretty decent field, a lot of celebrities there. Anything that gives it a spotlight like that in the doldrums of late January, I think is a good thing.
Yeah, I guess we've complained for many, many years, right, about racing not getting enough coverage and racing not having enough highlight in the eyes of the public. So I shouldn't complain about anything that does that. And I don't know if I'm complaining as much as I'm just trying to figure it out. I mean, just as we started the show, doesn't the Pegasus World Cup, where it's placed, seem more like the end of 2017 than it does the beginning of 2018?
I would say that's fair. It's yes, because you haven't developed your 3-year-olds yet to run into the new handicap class. So I would agree. It seems like a hangover from the previous year. I, to me, Bill, the only negative of the race, it replaces what I think is a historic race down there called the Don Handicap. But
right.
Other than that, I agree. I don't know where it kind of fits in terms of kind of assessing the horse's accomplishments for the year, but I'm all for getting good horses together and getting a spotlight on the race, depending upon where it fits.
No, of course, I agree. I guess I'm just trying to figure where, it's spot on the calendar makes it such that it's after the Breeders' Cup
right.
Classic, but before horses can go off to the breeding sheds, you get one last look at them. It's the biggest purse, and as Mike said, it's the biggest purse in the world. Although even that is a little bit of a tinge of hocus pocus in the purse. But I guess Arrogate was so impressive in that race, and yet by the time Horse of the Year came around, he wasn't really a contender. And I guess I just can't. It's too much tradition for me to think through. But Mike,
right?
I guess the mile and an eighth at Gulfstream is so unfair, as you pointed out. The 10 post and out is so difficult. I guess they had toyed with the idea of changing the run up. And for our listeners who don't focus on the run up. The race starts, there's a mile and an eighth, but it's timed from a running start. And there's a lot of latitude the racetracks can have in how far behind the mile and an eighth marker they put the starting gate. And I guess Gulfstream takes it to ridiculous levels. And there was some suggestion that to make it more fair, to make the run-up longer so that the turn didn't come so fast, but that makes it almost like a mile and 3/16 instead of a mile and an eighth. Right, Mike? I mean, That's the complaint people have.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct, Bill. But I'm in total agreement. Just to back up a minute, I'm with Bob, and I really didn't think Gunrunner was the horse that we made him out to be, and he really impressed. I mean, I remember him going into the gate the other day. Wanted to comment. Everybody really wasn't sold on him too much. Going into the gate that day, they thought he didn't know how he'd come back after the classic race. And I tell you what, it was an eye opening performance. I mean, what a way to go off. And even Steve Asmussen said, he's just done things that amazed him. And kudos. He really improved his position throughout the year, with races. They said the race in Saratoga, he didn't run it. It was questionable what he ran against. And, when he went into the Classic, he really ran a big race in the Classic. And to go out the way he went out, he goes down as really one of the good horses of all time.
Yeah, I think Bob, there's no question, right, that he's a Hall of Fame entrant when its time comes.
Oh, he was prior to that race. Now he's – listen, you can talk about him in the same breath as Arrogate and California Chrome and American Pharoah, all the recent stars that we've been privileged to see. He's right there with them. Bill, you made
right.
the point. You made the point when I was sitting on – when I was on this show saying he couldn't get a mile and a quarter – you made the point that look at his race at Dubai. It's a really good race. He ran bang up to Arrogate, and you were dead on there. And yes. He took that forward. Steve Asmussen handled him beautifully. Almost reminds me of Affirmed a little bit, the way he looked on the track, his kind of sleek, athletic way of going. But listen,
you're 100% right on Affirmed, because like Affirmed,
oh, that's a great
he's
comparison.
Often on the wrong lead through the stretch, right? I mean, he changes leads to the wrong lead in the stretch. And that, in many cases, that shows a horse is tired and is about to get passed. But Affirmed, then he both would switch to that the wrong lead and then take off again. So he constantly looks like he's about to be caught, and then he just finds more.
Yeah, win, lose, or draw, he's a good horse. I mean, like you said, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. And you know, when you think about it, as much as we said the end of 2017, but it's nice to start off the year with an impressive win like that, and a horse retiring and going off. And you know, let's see what West Coast can do in his 4-year-old campaign, because I guess right now he's going to be the leading 4-year-old.
Yeah, I thought Javier Castellano paid Gunrunner a big compliment when he said that he tried to surprise Gunrunner by making a swift move on him. And, I mean, just in general, you don't have to do any surprise trick plays on anybody when you think you're better than them. You use trick plays when you realize somebody's better than you, and you hope to kind
right.
of, you know, win by surprise, right? So you don't often see teams who are favored in the Super Bowl say we're going to do nothing but run trick plays. You know, that's kind of a hope to try to beat somebody. I think it's important to remember too that Gunrunner passed last year's Pegasus World Cup. He could have run in it, but because of the quarantine restrictions put on him that were proposed for him to go from Fairgrounds to Gulfstream Park, the owners and trainers of Gunrunner decided that it was too taxing on the horse, and they would wait for somewhere down the road where it was less onerous, and it certainly paid off, because they ran huge in Dubai, and then they ran off the streak of 6 in a row, and you know, ended with a $16 million purse.
Yeah, and Bill, I'll say, you know, going forward now, if West Coast at all runs to his looks, he's going to be an awfully nice horse this year, because he is a beautiful-looking animal on that racetrack.
Well, he is, and I guess with the surprise a little bit was Collected going right to the front. I guess Collected, Mike, they're saying, is going to go back to the grass.
Yeah, that's what I think. That's what the plan is for him, Bill. I agree. I think I read that somewhere also.
And Bill, did either of you hear or read what the story was with Sharp Azteca? Did Irad take him back by design, or did he miss the break? Or because I went into that race thinking he had to be on the lead, and that was the only way he could run that
race. I was in total agreement with you, Bob. I didn't – when I saw him fourth on the outside, you know, and Mike Smith, you know, went with Collected, I thought, you know, Irad, you know, would have pushed Sharp Azteca too. I was really shocked that Sharp Azteca wasn't first or second down the backstretch. I agree 100%.
Yeah, I think we all were. I mean, no, I didn't read anything about it. We can go back and look and see what their quotes – I saw Irad try to get him on the front out of the gate. I mean, the only thing I could figure is that Sharp Azteca, for all his speed, you know, hasn't really run around two turns. And it looked to me like, you know, once he didn't beat Collected out of the gate, he was a little uncomfortable with a turn right in his face right away. And I just don't think he could keep up. Now, I know the time was snail-like compared to what Sharp Azteca has run in the past.
But I think
maybe it was just the two turns, and not so much the distance, but just the unfamiliarity with you know, having a turn hit him in the face after that first eighth of a mile.
Right.
I don't know. Other people have speculated that the workout that he had that was so blazing fast was too fast. You know, we've seen that before, but that normally doesn't dull your speed, right, Mike? That normally causes you to tire late in the stretch if you work too fast earlier in the week.
Absolutely. It doesn't have an effect on your strategy for the race. You know, if you work fast and you're a speed horse, like, you know, like Bob said, you're expected to be on the lead or just off the lead. And that's why I don't know if it, you know, Irad sometimes can be very unaggressive, you know, he likes to be more of a finesse rider, unlike his brother Jose. But, you know, with a horse like a Sharp Azteca, every race he's run, he's been, you know, if you watch the race in the Breeders' Cup with Paco Lopez, he's been on the lead or just off the lead.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think everybody, the conventional wisdom, and certainly I did, I thought he'd be, you know, guns blazing out of the gate and just go as far or as fast as he could, and that didn't materialize. Let's talk a little bit about the purse distribution. I mean, somebody on Twitter was a bit of snarky, I think, saying, you know, taste of New York, what an unbelievable training job. You know, he comes back with one race off a 3-year layoff and earns $650,000 because his share of the purse for finishing last was $650,000. Now, for our listeners, you know, the $650,000 came with a $1 million entrance fee. And so this race is the only race that kind of has that. Does it skewer? And I guess I know the answer. It does skewer it. But how important is
sure
it that it's this race skewers all the numerical earnings questions?
You're correct. It does. You know, it's a statistical anomaly going forward that I guess is going to have to be asterisked. You know, it's a measure of a horse's accomplishments, and this does artificially inflate it. I think there's no question about it. It's a lot of money.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, you look at the leaderboards. Traditionally, you measure horses' earnings and jockeys' earnings. And this race right in the very beginning of the year kind of makes the rest of that whole race kind of academic because it's so large in comparison that it kind of knocks all those apart. I guess what I don't know, Bob, do you know, to get that purse, do you have to finish the race or is it just starting it enough? And I say that because there's a danger in making a horse finish who probably shouldn't.
Yeah. An excellent question. I don't know the answer.
You do have to cross the wire, Bill.
Right. So now, those of us who've been around a long enough time, you know that if anything in this game, anything that can go wrong will go wrong at the worst possible time, right? So if you have a horse now who otherwise would be eased, and Big Brown comes to mind when Kent DeSormo did the right thing when it was 110 degrees at Belmont, and he wrapped up on him and he eased him across the wire and didn't care whether he finished the wire, if that costs your owner $650,000, you know, there's clearly an incentive and a desire to push a horse past where he should, and in the past, that's always been a tragedy waiting to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. But they did say the stipulation was you did have to finish.
Yeah, so that's at some point. They have to rethink that, I think, because that has the potential to come back and bite them. Well, enough about that. I guess Gunrunner is off to stud. I understand he's standing for a $65,000 fee, which seems like a particularly not round number. You know, I'm surprised they didn't go for 75. But I guess we'll see how he stacks up in a couple of years against Bob, as you said, against Arrogate, American Pharoah, who I guess is going to have, you know, a million kids running around in the next few years. It seems like they breed him on both sides of the planet, the northern hemisphere and southern hemisphere. So we'll see how they start going. It'll be interesting to see. But you know, we closed the book on one racing year or one career. We open another. I guess let's talk about this week a little bit. Before I say that, for our listeners, you know, we will be taking calls tonight if anybody wants to call and get in on this discussion. It's our first night back. We haven't lined up, some of the stellar guests we normally have. We were hoping to have Dylan Davis on tonight, but Dylan Davis has another commitment. He was hoping to join us. So it's just going to be the three of us tonight. So if anybody wants to call and join us, please do. It's 646-716-4442. But let's turn the page. I guess the big action this week is in Gulfstream, right, Bob? Did we get a chance to look at it?
I did. the three-year-olds step forward this Saturday, both the fillies and the forward gal, and the three-year-old colts either sprinting in the swale or going in the family. Is it the family youth tomorrow?
No, Holy Bull.
The Holy Bull.
I'm sorry. I'm right. Race head. The Holy Bull. Plus you got the 3 year olds on the grass. It's a terrific card tomorrow. So you've got the 3 year olds stepping forward there, plus the Withers at Aqueduct, plus the Lewis out in California. So the 3 year olds now that we've been waiting on will start to emerge starting this Saturday. And as we, you know, Bill, actually before we go through the races, and there's a lot to really sink our teeth into here, I'm wondering if, have you or Mike heard if and when Good Magic is going to start moving forward? Because I haven't seen him mentioned anywhere yet.
I think he worked the other day. I think I saw that. I can look it up as Mike. I think he worked out of Palm Meadows. I believe I saw that, that it was either just this week or the very end of the last week. I guess Chad Brown is kind of bringing him back. And
right.
Let me see if I can look it up and see where he's pointing at. I mean, look, before we get involved in the actual races, one other thing I wanted to speak about, I guess the nominations for the Triple Crown came out, and I forget exactly how many horses is. I think it's 603, I think. And I think someone said 27% of all of them are trained by just four trainers. And that kind of shows the concentration of the game that's come about.
Yeah, we were talking about that. We were talking about that, Bill. You know, you and I, Bob, Bill and I spoke with this many times. You know, it's almost become, it seems like almost like a monopoly. And you see the proof of it, 27%. That's a big number.
Yeah, so I guess the four. I could guess who the four are. I should know this before I brought it up. But it's obvious. It's Todd Pletcher, Chad Brown. I don't know who the other two are. Kieran McLaughlin, I guess.
Would it be Baffert and maybe
Asmussen?
Right. Oh, Baffert, maybe. Oh, and Asmussen. Right. And I guess you see that this week. By the time you look at it, you see this week that. A lot of these races that we have multiple entrants from barns, and I guess they're shipping horses to New York to avoid running against each other. So
yeah.
it begins the sorting out process, but it does. I don't know if it's unfair as much as it takes away some interest when it's one of a whole host of horses from the same barn.
You know, Bill.
Go ahead, Bob.
I'm sorry, Mike.
No.
20 odd years ago, in business, if you had a company and you needed a mainframe, you automatically got IBM because you couldn't go wrong getting IBM. It was the safe pick. And I guess that's the same philosophy that permeates in ownership today, in that if you're sitting on a very, very precocious young horse, why mess around? Go with the proven success. And I guess that's what the owners are doing today.
Right, absolutely. Just to update you, Bob, I know because you had asked the question, Good Magic has came back with two works since it both in January, worked the last two Sundays, worked the 21st, 3/8 in 36 and 4, the best of 10, and then came back on the 28th and worked a half in 48 and 1, the best of 38.
Right.
So
right.
She's right on schedule, I guess, for wherever Trad's going to point there for her return. She seems to be working really well, and, I guess she's got to be marked as one of the early favorites for the Triple Crown.
I guess we've already seen a couple of horses who are on the trail have a little problem. Mask, who is so impressive, seems to have a little problem. Not certainly
he's out
doesn't
a couple
seem
of
to
weeks.
Be.
Yeah.
Right. That's never good. St. Patrick's Day, who is I think is the half to American Pharaoh, that's owned by the Zayats. I understand is in Ireland with a tendon problem and. You know, I wish them well, but a tendon problem is normally very difficult to overcome. What did I say about a bowed tendon? The only guy who ever did good with a bow was Robin Hood. You know, once you get a bow, you have a problem. And I guess their other horse, Solomini, I think it had a little setback. I'm not sure what it was. I forget what it was. So you're already starting to see some attrition on the, on the trail. But Bob, getting back to your point about going with the proven winner, it's addition to a proven winner. It's people who trainers who have dedicated themselves and have been through the routine a lot. I mean, I guess you run the risk with having a trainer who hasn't been there, that they're either too eager to get there. Or they're too conservative and don't want to go there. And I think the one thing you do seem to know about you know those four trainers that they're going to go there if at all possible to the Triple Crown races and no matter what happens in this game, the Triple Crown races are still the things that attract owners and that's still the dreams everyone has.
Yeah, and they're the top four for a reason. You know, not only are they great trainers and horsemen, but in many cases they're spotting these horses for these owners at the point of sale. So if Baffert's buying for Pegram and has selected, of course that's who's going to train the horse, and it's his eyes and his acuity and seeing the ability of that yearling to be a racehorse going forward that gets him that, ability to train that horse. You know, so it's been proven over years that he and others, like a successful trainers like himself, can pick the horses properly at sale and they roll forward and their success on the racetrack is 2 and 3 year olds.
Right, right. Yeah, and you hate to use a phrase, but if they don't get there, they won't die trying. You don't want to use that phrase, but they're going to pull out all stops to get there. So
sure.
So clearly, if that's your focus, this leads into a little bit of a different discussion, and we're not prepared to talk about this because we haven't discussed it prior. And Mike, I'll throw it to you first. But what is the Breeders' Cup doing with all these thinking about all these new races and this idea of a end of the year Derby, Breeders' Cup Derby, run in December. What is that all about?
I have no idea, but now they're talking about a couple of different locations that they want to think about, a couple of different tracks, and I don't know. It just sounds a little screwy to me right now from what I was reading.
Yeah, I mean we have Jim Clarkson is a friend of the show, and we'll have him on and we'll ask him. But when we had him on, we spoke about different things about, moving the time of the race and, how could you get the race into the Northeast more? How could you get it in Saratoga? You'd have to push it back here. Did you ever think about running in Europe so it could be on in prime time? And he was very kind to us, but he was very clear that they were happy with what they had and it was growing and it was had its own brand and they weren't going to mess tinker with it. And then all of a sudden they come out, and for our listeners who hadn't heard it, they're toying with the idea of running the Breeders' Cup Classic. But then after that, running another 3-year-old race and calling it the Derby, so I guess complete lack of imagination, calling it the Breeders' Cup Derby, and running it somewhere else in December and sort of the second half of the 3-year-old year. And there's a reason why 3-year-olds run against older horses later in the year. Traditionally, it's because they're really not youngsters anymore. You know, horses age at a different pace than humans, and the year doesn't really mean anything. The first half of the year, the 3-year-old year, they're young, and by the end of the year, they're expected to run against older horses. So I just don't see the need for it. I don't get it.
I don't get it. Well, number one, I hadn't heard any of this, Bill, at all.
Okay.
So this is listening.
I don't mean to put you on the spot.
But I don't understand it. I think it's a bad idea. So now, if you're sitting on a pretty nice three-year-old in September, October, you're less likely to go in the Classic. Just wait a month and go in whatever this Derby is for big bucks. It's going to dilute the Classic. I think it's a bad idea all the way around.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, they talked about adding another race. You know, they've toyed with races. They've added races. They've taken races out. And I'm all for that. You know, constant change is good. But but I just don't get that idea of trying to, and again, trying to be jealous of the Kentucky Derby. I mean, that's not going to change. The Kentucky Derby is the Kentucky Derby for a lot of reasons, not all of which are horse racing. You know, I mean, if you've been there, and I've been lucky enough to be to a few, and it's really a celebration of spring, is what it is. It's as much as a cultural and seasonal gathering as it is a horse race. So I don't know if you can just replicate it in December by calling it the Derby, but you know.
Bill, if you remember, and also Bob, we spoke about this, before the Breeders' Cup Classic, and before the Pegasus, and saying, were people going to use the Breeders' Cup Classic as a prep race for the Pegasus? I mean, you know, it's just gotten out of hand, and you know, some of these names and what they're doing. I mean, like I agree with you. I don't care what the purse of the Derby is. The Derby will still be my favorite race. The Derby will still be the race of the year, in my opinion. And everybody, I think any owner out there, I think if you ask them what race would you want to win most, I think they would still say the Kentucky Derby, no matter what, money wise or purse wise.
Yeah, I mean it's one of the few races that it really doesn't matter who's running in it. You know, in years where there's an overwhelming favorite and a horse who's a superstar, people get all excited about it. And years when those guys don't show up, just like this year when Mastery didn't make it, people are still excited about it because it's a full open field. And you're just not gonna recapture that. I don't think anywhere else. So let's hope there's a saying, right, in business, Bob, it's a bad idea whose time has come. And I guess we've been around corporate America long enough to know that, you know, the more you say it's a bad idea, the more people say, well, let's give it a try. You know, there's no better way to get corporate people to do things than to say, no, that's bad.
Crazy.
Let's hope it's an idea that comes and goes. Before we speak further about it, at the risk of sounding old and cranky, before we start talking about the races, this week's race at Aqueduct is the Withers, and it's the 138th running of the Withers, and it just strikes me that it just should be in a better place than Aqueduct on February 4th or whatever date that is, February 3rd. Don't you think it deserves a little more.
Wasn't it normally in May?
It absolutely was. Yes, it was. It was right before. It was right before Memorial Day weekend, if I'm not mistaken, Bob.
Sometimes it was the opening day feature at Belmont.
Right.
Yep. Yes, that's correct. Yep.
Yeah, and I'm glad they kept it. But man, talk about being put in the dustbin. You know,
Bill. I'll say it did not come up with a bad field this year. You know, despite the fact that it's on February 3rd, I think it's a better than normal winter race for three-year-olds in New York at this time of year.
Yeah, I agree. We'll talk about it a little bit later. Mike and I have bemoaned the fate of New York racing right now. It's a combination of a bunch of things. Certainly the weather didn't help. But boy, is it ugly. I mean, some of those cards, if you take a look at Sunday's card, I think the first three races have five or six horses in each race. And between the illness that went around the barn and the training schedules being all screwed up and the weather just, maybe winter racing in New York is a bad idea whose time is coming gone too. I don't know. Yeah. And Mike, I know you feel strongly about that, but I guess the less to say, the better on that. We'll hope that
you heard. I didn't say a word, Bill.
That's funny. Let's talk a little bit about the Gulfstream card. I mean, I'll start it off a little bit, and one of the things that's striking me is the most that starts it. think it starts at 11 o'clock, so there's a lot of races on the day in Gulfstream. But the first one that I think really matters is the Swale. And is the Swale the third race or the fifth race? Let me see what it is.
Fourth race, I think, Phil.
Fourth race. Okay, so the Swale, talk about a horse who was great, right? I mean, Swale was a Woody Stevens horse who won I don't know what he won. He won almost every race he ran in, but he lost only the Preakness. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been a triple crown winner.
He won the Belmont, and unfortunately, he perished soon thereafter.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had a heart attack or something, right?
I think, not right after the race, but the
week or so after the race. And
did he start off the Woody Stevens Belmont run, Bob?
It's a good question. Was Conquistador Cielo before him or after him?
I think Conquistador Cielo was after him.
Then he might have started it. Yeah, that was King Kai rode him that day.
Right.
Soft fractions. He let him loose at the head of the lane, and he was gone. He ran a beautiful race that day.
Yeah, he was a beautiful looking horse. He was well bred too, so I think they expected that he'd go on to become a big sire. And as you say, he passed away. He passed away right at the top of his game in the middle of the 3-year-old year. But this is kind of a fitting race to be named after him. It's nice. It's seven furlong 3-year-old race, and it's become. Well, I'll see how many. It's the 33rd running. It's we're showing how old we are that we kind of remember
right.
It was brand new. But it's traditionally a really good race for some horses who maybe have distance limitations, but still are pretty good. And this year is, no different. It's a relatively small field with only six horses. But I guess the big story, and I don't know where this comes about, Mark Hennig, who's always been a quality trainer, but he's just absolutely on fire now with first-time starters down in Gulfstream. I think he won four out of five, or five in a row, Mike, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
So okay, but I think between his first timers at New York and in Florida at one point, I think he won with five first time starters, and they're all well bred, but still he just wasn't really known over the last few years as being a first out winning trainer. He has a horse called Strike Power, who 2 days before Christmas was the easiest kind of winner. Down in Gulfstream, going a short distance, a sprint, but he wasn't that day. He was
buyer first time out, 102 buyer first time out.
Right, I mean he's bred well, but he's a homebred, so you didn't really know what he didn't go through the auction ring, so you didn't know how good he looked for buyers. And he just manhandled that field. Now he comes back, and I guess he's 7-5. And frankly, I don't know what to make about it.
I don't know. It's a big number first time out. And it looks like the second place horse came back and was a subsequent winner. But these are 7-5 shots that I live to bet against because he's going to get hooked. And tested with some more experience. And listen, he may be a really, really, I'm sure he's a really, really nice horse, but he's going to be tested. And I think there's a lot of quality in this race that could give him, that could upset the Alcoa Heart here, whether it's Diamond King. I had my eye on Gotta Go, Piven. I think there's a lot of ways you could go here to perhaps beat the favorite.
Well, I think one thing to say, you say he's a 7-5 shot, you bet against. He's liable to be 4-5. I mean, I don't know if he will or not, but he's liable to be. And drawing from the outside will help him. But I there's two things here. I don't know whether if you want to bet against what is the resurgent trainer that is now Mark Hennig. Or whether you want to fight the tide there, or whether you want to do old-fashioned handicapping and say this horse will be overbet and can't really be trusted the first time he's being pressed against. The other horse that I've looked at, and sometimes I am impressed by money that horses take, and that's Arno Delacour's horse, Tricks to Do. And I guess he was 1-20 in 1-10 rather in his breaking his maiden down in Laurel, and then he was 2-5 winning his 2-year-old final race at Tampa. So there's probably some quality there. You know, I don't know. I don't know. This is a big step up, but somebody bet him with both hands both times, thinking that they had something special there, and that kind of always impresses me.
Bill, somebody paid $600,000 for him. You know, at the 2-year-old.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, well, that too. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
What do you guys make of the one horse in there? First time for John Service. I believe he took the horse off Mark Reed, Diamond King.
You know, done nothing wrong, right? Four starts,
right.
Three wins. The only time he lost, he clipped heels and he lost his rider in the Grade Two race down in Churchill Downs.
Yep.
So he could very well be undefeated. You know, the rider stays with him with the new trainer. John Service is a quality trainer. He's a quality road, which probably makes me think distance is better for him than going 7 furlongs. And you know, I guess the question is this kind of a prep for something longer, or is this his aim?
Well, with the 7/8 trip here, Bob, doesn't he? Maybe this sets up nice for him, especially with the outside horse going. You know he's going to get some early challenge. I mean, he might sit a ground saving trip from the inside and be able to run these horses down just with the experience factor.
Mike, he's very bettable. I mean, to me, the only knock is the post, but this horse is very playable. You got 5-6-1 on this one. I don't disagree. With the same kind of thinking, that's how I landed on Gotta Go. I thought
right.
He could close the pace. His one-turn races are good. He had a lot of trouble in the Grade Two. I like Ian Wilkes. The similar thinking, I went with that, but you can make a case for 2 or 3 here very easily.
If you're looking at a speed duel between Strike Power and Tricks to Do, which is altogether possible, it kind of opens the race up for everyone. I mean, even Piven has a win over the racetrack in a restricted stake, but Piven, the comment, you know, well rated 4 wide, that's kind of what you need to do to win a 7-furlong race is rate kindly and power home. So that race that'll be a good racing, certainly a good
yes.
betting race, even though there's only 6 horses. And I'm with Bob. I would stay away from what I think is going to be the odds on Strike Power. If he beats us, you know, all the power to him, but I would lean the other way.
It's also a big jump going from 5.5 to 7/8 second start.
You know, that's more than the typical jump of 5.5 furlongs to 6, or even from 6 to 7. You're right. So that's a big jump. So start your day off at 1:30 there, trying to beat a even money or odds on horse with somebody else. But we'll leave it to you to pick who you want to beat him. That's the one problem, right? How many times do you beat an odds on favorite? You still don't catch the winner.
Right.
The next thing that caught me, I don't have an opinion on the Swedish Chant, which is the 6th race on the grass going a mile. I can't separate those horses. I'm not opposed to talking about it, but I just look at it and it hurts my head. It seems like anybody could win that race. You have 2 horses in there from Chad Brown. You have a horse coming from I guess one of the few tracks that none of us I think have ever heard of. Chad Brown has his horse coming from the Lobuscott in France. I don't know where that is. Mike, Bob, do you have any idea where that race is?
I do not know.
I mean, one of the great things about following racing all these years is you sound much more sophisticated than you really are, I guess, because we see stuff from around the world on paper and you're, oh yeah, I know where that is, you know, without having been there. But this is one I haven't seen, and I don't know who. You know, Christoph Furland is as a trainer, and you know, but it's one of those other horses, another one of those horses. And now I guess Michael Dubb has more horses with Chad Brown, so it's making the rich get richer, I guess, right?
If you guys want to go back and take a look before you bet this race, go back and take a look at the number two horse, Andina Del Sor, Tom Alvetrani. I remember breaking his maiden in Aqueduct. He was very, very impressive. But go back and take a look at his last race. He at the top of the stretch, he was on the clubhouse side coming into the stretch, Bill, and he still ran on. Joel Rosario stays with him. This is a real nice three-year-old filly by Giants Causeway, and I think she has every chance and every potential to win this race.
Good. So there's that's the insight we're looking for. So this is race six at Gulfstream, and Dina Dulcer. I laugh at Joel Rosario. I mean, is there a rider, a more talented rider, who has more puzzling rides than he does? I mean, he is. What's the nursery rhyme? You know, the little girl with the curl right down her forehead. You know, when she was good, she was very, very good. But when she was bad, she was horrid. Some of his rides in the grass are just. I don't. Did you see the race he won on at Gulfstream on Saturday with Stormy Victoria?
Oh yes, yeah. I know you're a big Stormy Victoria fan. I know you caught her a couple of times.
He did everything at the start, Mike. That's Bobby did everything but get off the horse. The horse checked, stopped. I mean, it was, and then he makes this crazy late run, gets up by a head, you know, and just crazy, and you don't know. So it's far be it for me to question him, but I will go back and look at that replay and see. It's not often that you see eight wide. You know, in a 10-horse field, 8-wide, upper stretch, strong finish. That is a comment.
And she just kept coming. She just kept running.
Well, she's probably asking a rider, what do you want
every
me to do?
Every trip handicapper
right?
in the world saw what I saw.
Okay, well, we'll go back and see it. So maybe you won't get the 4-1, but that race hurt my head. And I saw a racetrack that I had never heard of before, it just kind of threw me a little bit. We'll keep moving on. We get the eighth race. The eighth race is a maiden special weight race, and keeping with the theme of what we said before, there's another first time starter. Trained by Mark Henning, and I guess now you have to pay attention to it. He's had a couple of bullet works, and you know seems to be working steadily since October. Probably will be bet pretty well with Irad Ortiz, but this field is loaded with a Pletcher horse, and you know there's bullets all over the page. So I'm not so sure what you would do with this. Mike, did you get any inkling on this? Sometimes you get inkling on 2 year olds. Any thought from anybody?
I didn't at all, but in races like this, a lot of times I often let the tote board be my guide.
Yeah, and I guess you won't be able to 100% trust the tote board because the Mark Henning horse is going to be getting bet, so because he's doing so well, they probably get bet no matter what. But that's probably a 3-year-old race. There are some times at Gulfstream Park this time of year, 3-year-old maiden races where horses win impressively, and then they make that jump right to a stakes race next time.
Right.
And it's probably worth not necessarily betting this race, but taking a look at it. And I think if somebody wins this race, the eighth race at Gulfstream on Saturday, impressively, there'll be some talk as to where does he go next, and they'll kind of rush him along and try to move him, get him into the big three-year-old pictures.
Mark ran a first-time starter on Saturday that, I mean, opened up, I think, even money and Bob. The horse opened up even money. Javier rode the horse. The horse had been tipped for weeks, and he showed a bullet work tab and everything. But I tell you, he was really impressive. I can't remember the name, but the horse actually won by 2 or 2.5 lengths, but was green as the turf course at Belmont. I mean, did everything wrong and still won off easy and beat a nice Pletcher firster also.
Yeah, it can't be ignored how well the Mark Henning bond is going right now. And sometimes guys get rejuvenated later on in their career, or they get invigorated with a new trainer or a new owner rather, or a new assistant trainer or a new focus, And whatever's going on in the Mark Henning barn, it's you have to take note of it because it's not what it's been the last few years, especially with the 2-year-olds, first time starters rather, you know, lightly raced horses. So yeah, it's you know, be forewarned on that.
Bill, before you leave the eighth, can I make a quick comment on actually a horse that I'm glad you picked the race because a horse caught my eye here quickly. The 5 horse here, Elusive Hero, is by a sire I have never heard of, and that doesn't mean anything. Runaway and Hyde, who stands for $7,500. Somebody paid $115,000 for this horse, and he's throwing down bullets at the training center. And I don't know, when I see a nondescript bred a horse with unfamiliar breeding, who someone paid more than the breeding would merit, and the works are there, it might be something to take a look at.
Bob, that's a tremendous angle. First of all, I don't know who Runaway and Hyde is. He's by City Zip. I don't remember who he was, and if he had a career, it wasn't very distinguished on the big circuit. Mike, do you remember Runaway and Hyde at all?
Trying to remember, Bill. I'm thinking about the horse now. The name sounds vaguely familiar, but I, like I said, I can't remember anything, earth shattering from him.
Right, but the point Bob's making is well put for handicappers out there, and you know they call this being overpaid or overbid, and it normally means one of two things, right? It means that a horse was such an outstanding physical specimen at the sale that regardless of his breeding, people paid up for it, paid much more than they would have, and it's one of two things. It's because he was such a tremendous physical specimen and you know, had perfect conformation and looked right, or somebody just lost their mind at the sale and overpaid for it, you know. it's more often the former rather than the latter. And I guess, you know, one of the measures is people say, you know, that 2-year-olds that their horses at the sale rather by a sire will pay 3 or 4 times the breeding the stud fee, and in this case, Bob points out it's 18 times or 16 times.
Well, Bob, here's something real interesting. I just looked up Runaway and Hyde, and Bill, this is really interesting, and maybe this has something to do with it, Bob. Runaway and Hyde was a 3-year-old by City Zip out of a runaway groom man named Jilted, was 3-for-3 in 3 career starts, 3 wins. So maybe someone knows something about this horse, and maybe that's the reason.
Yeah, I'm going to keep an eye on this one Saturday and maybe spread across the board. He'll be a price. I mean, with what's in this race, I'll bet he's a price. But and listen, Ian Wilkes is extremely capable, so that's something I might keep an eye on.
Gets yeah, LASIK. This may be. You're going to get the price because Ian Wilkes
who's
is going to
who's the owner on that horse?
Ed and Susie Orr, O-R-R. Again, that name, okay. So, you know, of course, the hockey name, Bobby Orr, but I don't
right.
know. I haven't seen their name before
no.
either. So maybe they're sitting on something there. And Bob, it's probably worth, even if you bet it this time and it doesn't win, probably worth following back because you know, Ian Wilkes tends to do better second time rather than at first.
Yes.
But you're right. That's an astute thing. Certainly something to look about. So that's Elusive Hero in the 8th race at Gulfstream. So post time around 3:35 Eastern. Although who knows what post time it'll be? Is there a more annoying development in racing than the last couple of years than the stretching the 0 minutes to post time out to 15 minutes?
There's 0 last 5 minutes. I never seen
yes,
that.
Yes, that it's amazing.
I mean, it defeats the whole purpose of having a clock. You know, I mean, nobody purposely has a clock that's wrong. why do you put it up there? I don't get it. You know,
if you watched last Saturday at Gulfstream, Bill and Bob, I actually watched it, and it was 5.5 minutes from the start of the pick four when there was zero on the clock till the last horse went into the gate.
Yeah, it's just trying to pump up that pool,
getting every last dollar.
And Mike, we've seen racetracks do that on big days, and they're waiting for television, or there's a scratch. But Gulfstream does it as a matter of course. I mean, it can be a Wednesday afternoon, and I think in New York State Gaming Commission kind of keeps track of that. It used to matter years ago when people were betting off track and didn't have access to television. They wanted to make sure people weren't betting after the race was over. You know, that was it was kind of protecting the bookmakers more than anything else to make sure the race went off on time. But, it's just annoying to watch. Well, let's move on to the 10th race at Gulfstream. That's the 3-year-old fillies. That's named the Forward Gal. And the Forward Gal was a really fast horse owned by the Firestones,
yes.
Trained by the late Leroy Jolly, back when he had a powerhouse stable, both of fillies and mares. I forget, I'm pretty sure that's right. This is a race that they've been running now for 38 years. And it's a 7-furlong race. It's the filly counterpart to the race we spoke
Swale.
Earlier of the Swale.
Yeah.
I guess let's mention two things. One is there's one horse in here who had a part of some controversy earlier in the year, and there's a tinge of sadness in her name, and it's Luch Racing Stables horse, Heaven Has My Nicky. And Heaven Has My Nicky is 2-for-2, but she's the filly that they tried to start as a first-time starter in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and we spoke about it on the show, and the Breeders' Cup decided that they weren't going to let them run a first-time starter in the Breeders' Cup filly race, and there was some controversy over that, and I guess the first time she ran, she proved she had some talent with an easy win in Mahoning Valley, and she came back in Gulfstream and had a head victory in a non-winners of one, so she certainly has some talent. Mike, do you know about the name of this, or should I talk about this a little bit?
No, go ahead, Bill.
Well, Luch Racing Stable is owned by a fellow who was on the show, one of the earlier shows I was on, Colucci, and he lost his 21-year-old daughter, you know, tragically and rather suddenly, and he named this horse after her. So it's kind of heartbreaking.
Wow.
That it's, the horse's name is Heaven Has My Nicky. He speaks about it often as kind of, you know, being a horse that he thinks is kind of heaven meant, and has some special meaning to him. So they're stepping this horse up a little bit, and I guess my heart is rooting for this horse to go on and be as good as they think she is. But she's in tough. I guess the horse that probably will attract most of the attention will be Take Charge Paula for Kieran McLaughlin, who's won 4 of 6 races already. Anybody else get a chance to take a look at this race?
I did not, Bill.
Bill, I thought
okay.
It was very even. It's funny. In the Swale, I said I don't like horses that break their maiden and roll right back with them. And having said that, my eye went bottom horse here a little bit, My Miss Lily. Given the post – by Tappet, should like the extra furlong. Castellano stays, another Mark Hennig, and very, very expensive purchase last year as a 2-year-old. So I might look at this outside horse here, even though I'm going exactly against what I said I don't like to do in the previous race. Could maybe sit off the trip on the outside, be a little bit above a price, and being a Tappet and getting the extra furlong might be able to move forward in this stake.
Right. Well, what's different about this one, Bob, is this one's going to be 6, 7, 8, 10 to 1,
right.
Not 4
right.
or 5. And you're right. You'll take the risk that the horse can make that type of jump, And I guess this horse won at Aqueduct 2 days before Christmas on sloppy tracks, and the track was a mess. So, you know, she has some determination to be able to win in that, those type of conditions. And this is a very aggressive step for them, so they must think she has some talent, and you might catch something at a big price. I would think Ron Paolucci's horse, this Heaven Has My Nicky, will probably take a lot of money due to her
sure.
due to her history. When you look around it, you know, Take Charge Paula, Kira McLaughlin, when you get some good, they normally stay good. But this horse has a 2-year-old, was 4 out of 6, winning some tough races. But sometimes those horses don't mature as fast as others do over the winter. Or they have an edge at 2. They don't necessarily carry it around at 3. So, Bob, I tend to agree with you that the value is on my Miss Lily, the 8 horse, the outside horse, and by tap it, just kind of could be anything. You just don't know. And if you're wrong,
right,
at least you took a shot at a decent price. And we'll see what comes out of that. I didn't have an opinion on the 11th race, which is the Dania Beach. And Dania Beach is another mile race on the grass. Again, it kind of hurt my head. I just look at it. If anybody has any thoughts there, you know, let's feel free to talk about them. I couldn't really.
I did not look at it.
Yeah, I couldn't. Mike, any thoughts? I couldn't discern any difference between any of them. So.
Me neither.
Well, that brings us to the top race, the Holy Bull. And talk about a horse who was fast, right? Holy Bull was, Holy Bull was everything, right? He was the great. He was a bullet. He was faster than fast, and he was a fast horse who carried his distance, his speed, and distance of ground, and kind of outran a lot of expectations, and it's good for him to be remembered. This is a mile and a 16th. It's $350,000, so it's 2 turns. At this time of year, it's one of the longer races you're going to get, so it probably has a pretty good lead-in to the Fountain of Youth and then the Florida Derby. So there's some familiar names in here, and it seems like Dale Romans has decided to run his entire barn. What is he? He's got 3 horses in here, so maybe Dale is one of those horses who has 4 of them, one of the 4 trainers. But Dale runs everybody. Todd Pletcher has 2, but I think the favorite will probably be Enticed for Kira McLaughlin, who's a big, long-striding horse by Medaglia d'Oro, and probably shouldn't have lost any races, in my opinion. It seems like even the one race he lost, the Ferenc Fire and Good Magic, he kind of took the worst of it in the trip and was still learning about it. And I kind of think Enticed as the horse was going to do better stretching out, and the rail certainly doesn't hurt.
Yeah, Bill, to me, the question in this race and in others that we'll see in the upcoming weeks is intent. You know, let's take Enticed or Free Drop Billy, who, you know, 2 of the very, very bettable horses here. Do their connections have – is Saturday the goal? Or is it a stepping stone to the Florida Derby, to the Kentucky Derby? And that's what's hard to figure here. Are they really cranked for a big effort here? Or maybe they're not, but they're so talented, they're going to win anyway. Or there's somebody else who's a little less heralded, but is really meant for whose connections are really pointing for this race, maybe step up and steal it. That, to me, that's the question.
This could be somebody else's Kentucky Derby is what you're saying, right, Bob?
Perhaps, and that's what I was trying to look to see here, if there was, maybe somebody who this is their big race. And I'm always a little intrigued. My favorite long shot trainer of all time is Eric Guillot, so I always look closely at what he's putting in. And, with his Southern Equine client. And I may give a little look there, but clearly Enticed, Free Drop Billy, His Mischief, are are all very well meant and you know, could see themselves running in the first Saturday in May. I'm just wondering if Master Manipulator, coming from an inside post, one of the few speeds in the race, maybe takes advantage of all that and you know, could perhaps steal this set, you know, being 20 to 1 or 15 to 1.
And Jose Ortiz.
Well, and Jose Ortiz as well.
You know, he's no stranger. He's no stranger to the upset, Eric. You know, he goes to the beat of his own drummer, and he, you know, you could do worse than, as you say, you know, looking for him to spring the upset. I guess one thing to talk about is the configuration of Gulfstream Park. If winning from the 10 or 11 post is tough at a mile and an eighth, it's damn near impossible at a mile and a 16th. So you have the horses out there, the 10 and 11, and the 10 may be overmatched. It's hard to really tell. He's trying a distance for the first time after going six furlongs. But the horse who on paper looks like he belongs, both breeding-wise and talent-wise, is Mississippi on the 11
yes.
post. And the horse is normally forwardly placed. If you are his connections, I don't think there's anything you really can do other than try to teach him to come from behind on this race. I don't think you can try to beat the gate from the 11 post going a mile and a 16th. And if you do, you'll knock yourself out. So
I totally agree, Bill. And we know Mark Cassie, you know, he does very, very good with the juvenile horses. You know, Leperu is his go-to rider. You know, like, you know, the one thing about this race, it's like Bob said, who is really going to be cranked? Who's using as a stepping stone to the next race? I really like, you know, looking at the race two or three times. I mean, if class dictates the race, like Bob said earlier, and the horses are ready, it looks like Entice and Free Drop Billy. I mean, if you throw out Free Drop Billy's last race, where, you know, he just might not have liked the surface in California. He's done absolutely nothing wrong. And if I don't know if you realize this, but when Dale Romans reaches out for Luis Saez, they're at like 43% clip on the win end.
Oh, wow.
That's interesting to know. I mean, that's no question that those statistics. But that stat is, you know, is eye popping because you know, I don't know what's about that combination it is, but I guess you have to entice Luis Saez, who's riding so good, to ride your horse. You have to convince him that he's worth it. I agree. I mean, I like Entice because he's a long striding horse. I'm not so sure being on the inside is going to help him. I can see him getting bogged down and trapped in there. And we could be back here next week saying, boy, Entice ran the best race, but he lost. You know, that's an entirely possible.
He might get a magical mystery tour with his new pilot.
Yeah, just spoke about Joel Rosario. You know, who knows? We just don't know. He could be 10 wide. But I think as far as down the road goes, and not necessarily helping anybody bet in this race, I'm going to be really interested to see what Mississippi does, because normally you're loathe to try an experiment with a horse and a purse for $350,000. But from out there, you know, this might be the perfect excuse to try to take him back and see whether he'll relax and see whether he'll make one run. You know, he's bred for distance by the Catch Me If You Can was a sprinter, but his dam was a sprinter. But Pioneer of the Nile, we know, gets distance horses, classic distance horses. And this may be a kind of a free roll for Mark Cassie to say to Leperu, you know, let's see what he does coming from behind. And I'm not even expecting him to win as much as I want to see how he rates and see what it sets him up for the next one. So I guess in my long term dream here would be to see Mississippi outrun early, make a decent run, finish in the middle of the pack, and then come back and win the Fountain of Youth a couple weeks from now. So let's talk about long term handicapping. So that takes us through. We skipped one race. I was going to say that takes us through to Gulfstream, but I want to go back to the 11th race. The 11th race is the grass race, and our friends from West Point Thoroughbreds have their good grass horse, their untamed Dimension, is it? Untamed Domain, rather. He's a three-year-old colt who's finished a bang-up second in the Breeders' Cup, juvenile turf. Has really done nothing wrong. And Mike, I think you were with me when we saw him win up in Saratoga, and at the time, both Terry Finley and Graham Motion told me this horse had a lot of talent, and they weren't wrong.
His race at Saratoga, where Catholic Boy won the race, he was probably best that day. He had an awful trip that day, and I really like this horse, guys. This is a nice horse, and I just think he's going to get better as he matures, and I'm looking for a big effort out of him on Saturday.
I mean, on the grass with Graham Motion, and Graham Motion is tends to be conservative. He wouldn't throw this horse right into a stakes race to begin the year if he wasn't at the top of his game. And I agree. I think that horse was, Jose Ortiz has ridden him a number of times, and really was beaten by that tough European Mendelssohn in the Breeders' Cup, and hasn't done anything wrong. He's by Animal Kingdom, so he's probably going to get better as he gets older. And, that would be a horse, well worth watching, in my opinion, on Saturday. I'm going to root for them anyway because I like the people from West Point.
Yeah, Terry's great, and Tom and the great for the game. They put their money up, and they deserve everything they get. They deserve results.
Right, and Bob, getting back to your point before, I mean, see, here's a horse, Animal Kingdom, the stud fee's $30,000. They paid $90,000 for him. That's about right, three times, four times
right.
the price. And, it gets a little skewered when you get to the higher levels, because once you get up into the stratosphere, almost anybody can pay anything. But for the most part, for regular horses, three, four times the stud fee is about where it lands. And if you pay more than that, it kind of means that you must have thought he was physically really impressive. But all right, well, with that, let's move to Aqueduct. There's only a few things to talk about Aqueduct, as we said. What did they say? And we're big backers in New York racing, so a lot of what we say isn't jest. But someone said that who is the rapper Post Malone who was at the Pegasus World Cup that caused a big stir? Did you ever follow that at all?
No,
I did not.
Nobody knows what I'm talking about, right? We're too old. Post Malone, I guess, is a rapper. And he was at the Pegasus World Cup, and he gave interviews, and he caused a big stir because he's just famous, And somebody said they're going to start a new trend of rock stars hanging out at different racetracks. And someone was listing things, and they said Insane Clown Posse, who's probably has some of the more raucous followers, and is known for meeting in mud-filled places around the country, said that they go to various racetracks, and I said even Insane Clown Posse won't go to Aqueduct this time of year because it's that tough, but Aqueduct can be. I was there last Saturday, and I just don't get it. There was no sound system. You couldn't hear the call of the races. You couldn't hear the call of the TVs. Everybody was there. Was nice, but it just was. It had little, if any, excitement. And I guess they're going to run races there, so we'll talk about them. But the Saturday card is tough. It's small fields. One of the things that I did notice is the third race. There's a horse who won over this racetrack last year for the people who Sagamore Farms. Shoe Love Shoe. I don't know what to make of that horse. He won his first race almost a year ago at Aqueduct, and they're back. He didn't carry on really as a two-year-old. And they're starting his three-year-old race. I don't really know what to make of it, but that might be a horse you could have some interest in.
Yeah,
take a look at him.
Works are good.
Yeah, although a lot of those works were before his last race, right? So that's one of the things that has me a little.
Yeah. Right, has not worked since you're correct, though.
Yeah, so I don't know what to make of it, but that's really the only thing that caught my that caught my eye, you know, in the early part of the card. We spoke earlier about the Withers. The Withers is a good race, Bob, as you pointed out. So why don't you talk about it a little? The 138th running of the Withers, and what's interesting is to show where who's here and why.
Yeah, mile and an eighth on, and no more inner. So they're on the outer track, and there's Friends Fire, who had a very successful Saratoga meet, won the Champagne, ran in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, not so well, came back and won recently in the Jerome in the Mud. Avery Island will get attention. Cold in Mississippi will get attention. Avery, the one I'm landing on a bit here, I'm not a big fan of Marconi, even though that's the last name of a very good friend of mine up in Connecticut here.
he invented the radio.
That too. I've always been a little, I've shown a preference to horses that ship up from Florida midwinter to run an aqueduct with the thought that they're maybe getting lesser competition, possibly at Aqueduct. And I also like the one-turn miles that Val Harbor's coming out of, those kind of extended sprints that I think are really taxing on a horse. A good second to Mask with a little trouble. I landed on Val Harbor here from the Todd Pletcher barn as with a jockey I like, Kendrick Carmouche.
Okay. Well, I mean, here's
and perhaps get home in the grade three with us.
Right. So I mean, so here's the thing we were talking about before. It's a 6-horse field. Todd Pletcher has 3 horses in it.
Yeah.
You know, this one is coming up from Gulfstream Park. The 5 Colton Mississippi has been at Gulfstream, been in New York. They have so many horses, they have to split them up and make sure they don't run against each other, right? I mean, that's really what's going on here. And you talk about intent, you know, I don't know if it's any grand plan. I think Todd has so many of them. I think he runs them hard, and, you know, the strong rise to the top, and then those that aren't, you know, go by the wayside. So it's really hard to pick among them. I guess if you spoke to him, he might not even have a really strong feeling as to who would be best on Saturday, which makes it so difficult to play.
Yeah.
The same thing goes for Avery Island, right? Avery Island, it's Avery Island's been training down at Palm Meadows in Florida, and it's pretty clear Kieran's running him here because he doesn't want to run him against Enticed.
Right.
So again, they're just looking to split these people up, these horses up rather. Mike, have you had an opportunity to look at it?
Yeah. Basically, I breezed through it. I like the horse that Bob mentioned, Val Harbor. I kind of think it's Avery Island's race to lose. I just think he's kind of the best in there. Kieran, I guess, Kieran too, he's got to separate them. And, you know, Avery Island's done absolutely nothing wrong going into the race. Bravo comes to ride. You know, he's going to be the favorite. But, I'm not going to play the race, but I am going to give you and Bob and the fans a little bit of something to look forward to, and maybe have some money for the Withers. And I have a real good play for you guys in the 5th race, a maiden special filly New York bred race that day. If anybody was around for December 16th, it was a very loaded maiden special New York bred 3-year-old filly race where a couple of horses were taking money. Particularly one that's running in the 5th race, and that's the number 2 horse, Lady Moyne. Lady Moyne's a second time starter, trained by Jimmy Jerkins. We all know that Jimmy, you know, doesn't really have his first as cranked up, but this horse went off at 7-2. She was 5 wide the whole way on a speed favoring track that a Clement horse won the race, Seeking the Blue. She wound up getting a little tired and finished 7th. She goes first time Lasix. she switches from Junior Alvarado to Hector Diaz Jr., who Jimmy has been very, very successful with. He popped with a first-time starter about a week before that with Hector Diaz that went off the screen and paid I think, $19. First-time Lasix, Jimmy has given the horse four works since the last race. You're going to get 6-1 and go to the window and box it with the one entry, and hopefully everybody has money to play the winners.
All right.
All right, so that's Saturday Aqueduct, race 5, number 2, Lady Moyne, trained by Jimmy Jerkins, ridden by Hector Diaz. So that's a Mike Monroe special there. That's great. Going back to the withers, I'm going to lean towards Avery Island. I think he's a big, long, striding horse. I thought he would have beat Catholic Boy the last time. Catholic Boy turns out to be, I think Catholic Boy was a little more polished than he was that day, a little more knew what he was doing. I don't know if Catholic Boy is more talented. And I think maybe Avery Island, big long striding course, the mile and an eighth, I think works every step further than what he's run before, helps him. And I think through the stretch, I think you're left with Avery Island, and I think Joe Bravo probably will have learned from the last time that you're probably going to give this horse his head and not try to rate him. So let's
right. Yeah, I was just going to say that, Bill. He didn't have the greatest of trips either that day. He was in between horses, and when Catholic Boy made his move, the race, it like kind of took Bravo by surprise. Like he got caught like a blind switch, and when he made his move, the race was practically already over, and he ran on well to be second that day, Bill.
Right, that's exactly the way I saw it, and I don't know if it was by accident, or whether they were trying to kind of teach him to be in between horses, which is a schooling thing you have to do, or they were just legitimately taken by surprise at how game Catholic Boy was. So I'm going to lean towards Avery Island. We can't really discuss the Sunday card, but I want to mention two horses on the Sunday card. Because one of them is owned by a friend of ours, Lou Zito and Donald Fingleton, and that's in the fifth race, a horse called Simona. Simona's ridden from maiden, 50,000 New York bred, and it was second last time out. And these people really do their homework, and they used Dave Duggan is a trainer that they've used in the past, and they've kind of come back with, and they plucked this horse out of the Midwest, I think Prairie Meadows. They bought him privately. And I hope they get a win with Simona in the fifth race in the fifth race on Sunday at Aqueduct. So before the Super Bowl, turn on and root for those guys. It's the New York bred program is lucrative, and if you can find a New York bred who's running elsewhere, it's well worth taking a look at. And then they did their homework and they found one running in Iowa. So let's hope they get the money here. They were second last time.
Dave Duggan is very, very quietly a very, very good trainer.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. He knows what he's doing. And like anybody else out there, it's become so tough to make any money because so many things are stacked against you with the big stables, and you got to get lucky. But he works hard, and let's hope he finds a good one here. I think the last time they said, let me look at it to make sure I'm right. I think it was Dylan Davis was riding him this time, and was going to be our guest tonight, and he rode him last time, and I think he said when the horse turned for home, if you look at it, I think he was surprised and he was getting stung a little bit by the kickback. And I think it surprised her a little bit. The kickback surprised her a little bit, and she backed away. So maybe this time she'll be more experienced. So I'm wrong. It was Indiana, but it wasn't Prairie Meadows. I guess it was Indiana racetrack. So root for them. I guess the other horse to watch on Sunday is Blewett. Blewett, named after Jason Blewett for Todd Pletcher.
Yeah.
So impressive in his debut. Ran a huge race in his second race, and it seemed like he just either got tired or lost interest in the last two strides and wound up getting beat by a horse coming from the outside. So I would think – I don't really know the field he's in against here, but my guess is he's the best on Sunday. So if you want to go Simona and Blewett for Super Bowl Sunday, that's worthwhile. We'll talk a little bit about Santa Anita. I have no real opinion. I don't know enough about those horses out there. They all look the same to me. So Bob, did you get a chance to look at it?
I did. In terms of the Palos Verdes, Roy H. is going to be extremely tough to beat. He's the Eclipse Award winner. He runs well off a layoff. It's a small field, so maybe American Eyes can shake loose and perhaps beat them. If you're going to try to beat them now and not later. But I think Roy H. is going to be very, very difficult in the Palos Verdes at 3-5 or 4-5. In the Lewis, listen, I don't know the horses as well as I do here in the East. I might take a wild, and this is a wild stab, with a horse by the name of Inscom, who has not won on the dirt, but been very successful at a mile on the grass, is a distorted unit out of a Lemon Drop Kid mare. Simon Callahan trains. And to me, this race is extremely wide open, and they paid $850,000 for this horse. Maybe try it on the dirt for see if they have some success. And maybe you get a repeat of the Catholic Cowboy situation you had in the Remsen. So maybe Inscom, a few dollars as a long shot play, but Roy H. looks to be very difficult in the sprint. I did not look at the handicap race that Pavel is in that comes up later in the card.
Yeah, I guess that's the San Pasquale. And the San Pasquale, I guess what's interesting about it, it's a lot of the California horses who run. Pavel's the most well-known name. I guess it's being touted as being a prep for either the Santa Anita Handicap, which makes sense, or more importantly, the Dubai World Cup. So you might as well take a look at that and kind of see which one of the Americans from California is going to wind up going to Dubai and trying to take down that big purse come in March.
Right.
But I'm with you. I can't separate any of those horses. Pavel, you know, for all the credit they got with Pavel, for when you look at it on paper, the horse has been mismanaged. You know, you have a horse who seems to have a tremendous amount of talent, and they threw him to the wolves by running him in the Jim Dandy right away, and he's been running in graded company, and they threw him to the wolves in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and then came right back into Malibu. I don't know that they. You know, again, I'm not going to second guess Doug O'Neill and for that matter, Paul Redham. They've had more success than I have. But when you look at it on paper, it seems like that horse really needs a break sometime. He needs to get an opportunity to, you know, to get some class relief. And, you know, I don't know if this is it. So I don't know what to make of that. You know, Bob Baffert has Mubtahij. You know, he again, another horse who was kind of second string. But, you know, has in fact run in the Dubai World Cup, I think more than once. So clearly, I think Bob Baffert's using this as a prep to get him back there for the big purse. I don't know what to make of it. I think we'll just watch it and see what it means going forward. Mike, any thoughts on those races out there?
Nah, Bill. I really didn't get the chance to look. I know that Roy H is going to be an overwhelming favorite. He's like Bob said, he's going to be really tough to beat. But I, to be honest with you, I really didn't get a chance to look at them yet.
Right. Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground here, guys. I appreciate this, and I hope our fans are happy that we're back. You know, it's we all have you know, real lives we have to do in addition to this, and it's a good thing when you get busy for good reasons. I was busy work-wise, and that's a good thing. But I think we'll try to get back on doing this every week, and we'll have some fun, and we'll set up some guests for next week. And you know, if there's fans out there who've listened to it, you know, please let us hear about it, because you know, it's fun to hear and get some feedback. You know, what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, you know, whether we should have more type of guests or whether we should tackle more difficult issues. Tonight was a pure handicapping thing. It was fun. It was like three guys, you know, good racetrackers sitting around talking. I enjoyed this tremendously, and I hope everybody else did.
Absolutely. Again, Bob, it's always great to have you on, too. It's very knowledgeable, and, you know, we'd love to have you on as much as you can help us.
Thank you very much. It's I love listening to the show, and to be part of it every now and then is a great thrill. So thank you.
Well, we're gonna have you more than every now and then. We're gonna I started doing it every once in a while too, and next thing you know, I did it 3 years in a row. So.
Yeah, he asked me if I wanted to come on. He asked me if I wanted to come on one night, Bob. I've been with him ever since.
Yeah, exactly. And then Mike got sick one night, and we almost canceled the show. So. With that, I want to thank everyone. Give us your thoughts. Pass the word around. This is a solid show for handicapping for Saturday. So if you didn't hear it now, or if someone hasn't listened to it, listen to it again. I'm going to play the music, and we'll be out. Thanks, everyone.
Good night, guys.
Good night, guys.